Before we begin the episode, we've got an update. Christina covered the cases of Taliba Islam and Tiffany Johnson a while back, both of whom disappeared under mysterious circumstances, 10 years apart from one another, and both of whom were involved with the same man, Chris Reville, who they were both last seen with. On Thursday, August 22, 2019, Reville was found guilty of the aggravated kidnapping of Tiffany Johnson and received a life sentence. We couldn't be happier with this outcome. Reville will be unable to hurt anyone else, and we'd like to extend our love to both Tiffany and Taliba's families. However, since neither woman has been found, justice is still incomplete. If you'd like to help in the searches, which will continue, please keep an eye on the Facebook page, Bring Tiffany Johnson Home. Thanks, y'all. Also, I apologize about the voice this episode. I'm feeling a little under the weather. Now on to the episode.
The Gone Cold podcast may contain violent or graphic subject matter. Listener discretion is advised.
In the world of true crime, there are many stories from the late 1980s and 1990s about young children being abducted in broad daylight and later found murdered. Often, the children were victims of other depraved and unimaginable acts at the hands of their abductor. Virtually every city and town across the United States, and even around the world, seems to have had one of these infamous cases. Life was, many thought, safer and more innocent back then. The children were allowed to walk around by themselves daily, and even until dusk in some cases. Cell phones weren't a thing, so a kid checking in with their parents wasn't as common or easy. Helicopter parenting was a much more difficult practice, if it was even possible. There was no national registry of sex offenders. When a child is snatched, a community might panic, but parents see the face of their own child on the missing flyers, so the community often comes together, and they rally with one goal: find that missing child. If the child is never found or found murdered, the community is shattered, and hope is lost. In San Antonio, Texas, the stories of two young girls abducted less than a month apart from one another in 1990, cases that remain unsolved, cold to this day, ended in devastation and ruin, and ultimately hopelessness. Heidi Lynn Seaman was just 11 years old when she went missing on August 4, 1990. Heidi had just completed the fifth grade at Stahl Elementary, and as school was still out for the summer, she was enjoying her free time with friends and family. Her skin was tanned from all the time spent outside in the hot summer Texas sun, and her light brown hair was cut just below the shoulders, with choppy bangs. Heidi had green eyes and was a lanky child, standing 4 feet 10 inches and weighing just 70 pounds. She was one of two daughters born to 36-year-old Air Force Master Sergeant Curtis Seaman and 35-year-old Teresa Seaman. The couple and their daughters lived in the north side of San Antonio, where Heidi's father was stationed at Brooks Air Force Base. On the day that Heidi went missing, she'd spent the prior Friday night over at a friend's house. The morning after, Saturday, Heidi's friend walked with her part of the way back to her home. They parted ways at around noon along Stahl Road, a deserted street about halfway to Heidi's house, and after saying their goodbyes, Heidi continued alone the rest of the way. but she never made it home. Heidi's friend later told police that during the walk, she noticed a red vehicle with tinted windows pass by multiple times, and that at the point where she and Heidi had parted ways, the car had just made its third pass. After walking a short way back toward her house, she turned to look for Heidi, but both the car and Heidi were gone. The day she went missing, Heidi was wearing a collarless white shirt with buttons at the top, purple jogging-style shorts, and black-and-white polka-dot sneakers. Heidi's friend helped police develop a composite sketch of the man in the car. The sketch is described as either a white or Hispanic male, with dark hair and a mustache, wearing aviator sunglasses. The disappearance of Heidi Seaman would lead to one of the largest and most expensive searches for a missing person, a child in this case, in U.S. history. Heidi's father began the initial search with a small group of family members. The day after Heidi went missing, Sunday, August 5th, about 150 volunteers came out to help in the search efforts, along with a police dog search team. Mr. and Mrs. Seaman thanked the volunteers for their efforts. Curtis Seaman told the local media, "I need them. I need their help. I feel so helpless, and there's not a lot I can do. I want to find her and get her home safe. We pray that we find her safe. We're willing to do anything to get her back, whatever it takes." Teresa Seaman added, "Please, if you've got my daughter, let her come home." Right away, local law enforcement labeled Heidi's disappearance as a stranger kidnapping, particularly because of the information provided by Heidi's friend about a small red vehicle stalking the girls right before she vanished. The FBI was called in to assist on the case immediately, and that Sunday, FBI spokesman Claude Martin pleaded with the public to share any information they may have that could help find Heidi. Their pleas would be answered as San Antonio homicide officers were flooded with calls of possible sightings. One such call came the following Wednesday, August 8th. There was apparently a person that called in who said they had sighted a light-colored truck with someone in the back bound and gagged near Interstate 35 in the New Braunfels area, said Sandy Perez, a spokesperson for the San Antonio Police Department. A 1972 Ford pickup truck with a full-length toolbox was spotted on Interstate 35 with its gate down around 7:30 or 8 a.m., and a man who was on his way to work pulled over to help the driver, but the driver refused his help. As the man made his way back to his vehicle, he claims he saw a small female tied and gagged in the bed of the pickup truck. This witness didn't do anything to help the female at that moment. He just went back to his car and continued on his way to work. But, to give him the benefit of the doubt, reluctantly, perhaps he was in a state of shock at what he'd seen. When the witness got into work, he told a coworker about what he saw and said that he was hesitant to report the sighting to law enforcement. But his coworker, fortunately, felt the gravity of the encounter and took it upon himself to call 911 to report the incident. Law enforcement officers raced to the reported location, but the truck was gone. They spoke to the witness, who described the driver as a white male, medium build, 6 feet tall, with black hair and sunglasses, and as, quote, extremely rough appearing. A massive search ensued. "We sent everyone out we had available," Guadalupe County Sheriff Melvin Harborth said. And they really did. Local sheriff's officers were joined by neighboring Comal County deputies, a team from Brooks Air Force Base, and FBI investigators, and even multiple helicopters from various agencies. But the quick response and tireless efforts led nowhere. The truck was not located, and Heidi's whereabouts remained a mystery. At this point, the search efforts near Heidi's home had grown to over 1,500 officers, retired law enforcement, family, friends, and community volunteers. The attempts were largely focused on the north of Heidi's home, which was an underdeveloped brush area. The Matthew Roberts Foundation assisted in the search efforts. It was the foundation's first missing child case since it was established to aid families with missing children after 6-year-old Matthew Roberts disappeared from Clovis, New Mexico. He was eventually found deceased and his death ruled an accident. The Roberts Foundation helped Heidi's family with printing and distributing missing persons posters that included photos and information on Heidi. They also provided emotional support to Heidi's relatives during the difficult period. Heidi's aunt said about the foundation, "I would be lost without them. I can't begin to name the ways they've helped already. If it weren't for the foundation, I would be walking from the front door to the back door, pacing and waiting for a phone call." As time went on and Heidi was still not found, the community of San Antonio provided a huge outpouring of support. Companies and individuals donated money to offer a reward of $11,000 for Heidi's safe return. The mayor of San Antonio declared Find Heidi Day on August 11th, which brought thousands more into the efforts. A few weeks after Heidi's disappearance, hopes were raised when the case went national after the television show America's Most Wanted ran a brief story on Heidi's disappearance and urged viewers with any information to call a toll-free number. Local volunteers in San Antonio established a search command post at a mall where they manned telephones, hoping the national segment might bring in more tips, but there were no solid clues. Heidi's mother often stopped by the command post, at one point telling local media that, "Just to see their faces helps more than you could know. It's good to know they really believe Heidi will soon be with us." The number of volunteers grew to around 6,000 individuals. One such volunteer was a coworker of Curtis Siemens, who served as a lead searcher and coordinator in the efforts to locate the missing young girl. Major Robert Eric Duncan, a psychologist and former supervisor of Curtis Siemens at Brooks Air Force Base in San Antonio, also later went on to have a key role in establishing the Heidi Search Center, which aided in search efforts for other missing children throughout Texas. As if Heidi's disappearance and the circumstances surrounding wasn't enough for the residents of San Antonio to endure, another event was soon to come that furthered the community's anguish, fear, and paranoia. On Thursday, August 23rd, just 19 days after Heidi disappeared, the community's hopes were again dashed when another young girl went missing from the area, this time in West San Antonio. 7-year-old Erica Marie Botello vanished from just outside her apartment complex around 12:30 p.m. that day, and just like in Heidi's disappearance, Erica had been with a friend. In this case, they were playing together outside their apartment complex, and Erica vanished right after they parted ways. The girls were playing when Erica's friend decided to go back inside. When she made it back into her apartment, she told police officers that she looked out her window and saw Erica talking to a man. She turned from the window, only to hear a loud scream, and when she went back to the window to check it out, Erica and the man were both gone. Erica was just 3 feet 11 inches tall and weighed only 48 pounds. She had jet black hair and a gorgeous smile. The searchers looking for Heidi now had another young girl to find, and they didn't hesitate to aid in the efforts to search for Erica as well. However, unlike in Heidi's case, The case of Erica Botteo's disappearance gained momentum quickly when, the day after she vanished, on Friday, August 24th, a teenage boy was arrested and charged with her kidnapping, along with resisting arrest and failing to identify himself to officers. 17-year-old Roger Jerome Springs was held in county jail with a bond of $120,000. Earlier that same month, Springs was charged with assault, but the charges had been dropped when he agreed to treatment at a San Antonio State Hospital, which was, it is described, a former county mental health facility. 2 days after Springs was arrested for Erica Botteo's kidnapping, the charges against him were upgraded to capital murder when Erica's deceased body was discovered inside a drainage ditch just a few blocks from her apartment. One of the volunteers who was involved in the efforts to search for both Heidi and Erica, Vanessa Tate Wynn, spoke to local NBC4 San Antonio on the anniversary of Erica's disappearance in 2015. For another little girl to go missing, it was devastating. It was devastating to everyone. We had an emergency meeting that night. Everyone came in and we were going to start making the ribbons, and then, you know, we found out that she'd been found. I have the picture of the young man that found Erica, and as you can imagine, he was very distraught. Erica's body was found around noon by one of the searchers combing the area. She had been placed more than 100 feet into a drainage ditch. Her hands were bound, and she was found only partially clothed. Police refused at the time to say whether she had been sexually molested and did not release the cause of death, but more recent news articles report that Erica had indeed been sexually assaulted and strangled to death. In the coming days, two more men would be arrested and charged with capital murder for Erica Botteo's slaying 31-year-old Kenneth Earl Pope and 31-year-old Sherman Bedford III. The men were held in jail on a $1 million bond. San Antonio Police Homicide Lieutenant Albert Ortiz seemed to suggest that police had evidence the men abducted Erica when he stated, quote, "We do know for a fact that they rode her around town for a long, long time." However, just 4 months later, a grand jury declined to indict Kenneth Earl Pope and Sherman Bedford for Erica's murder due to insufficient evidence, despite the fact that Sherman Bedford confessed to the crime. It's hard to be certain, since there is a lot less information on Erica's kidnapping and death than Heidi's, but it seems the grand jury made the right decision not to indict Pope and Bedford. Assistant District Attorney Sam Ponder said that police may have pushed Bedford into a false confession due to his low IQ. He stated at the time, to paraphrase, that Bedford's mental disability rendered him easily susceptible to suggestion at the hands of a police interrogator. While Kenneth Earl Pope and Sherman Bedford were released from jail following the determination that no evidence linked them to the crime, the first suspect to be arrested, 17-year-old Roger Springs, remained in jail. We couldn't find any information on what exactly happened with Springs, but an Austin American Statesman article from 2010 states that, quote, "Suspects were briefly considered in the Botteo slaying, but those cases went nowhere." Another recent article seems to hint that Springs may have had an alibi. As previously noted, Erica Botteo's case received much less attention than Heidi Seaman's case, so the details are harder to come by. Some have suggested that Erica's case lacked attention and publicity compared with Heidi's case because Erica was Hispanic and Heidi was white. Others have said that it was a North Side versus South Side issue, which implies that Erica's lack of coverage compared to Heidi's is due more to socioeconomics than race. Volunteer searcher Vanessa Tate Wynn, speaking with KSAT 12 News in 2018, said, "It was an immediate response. At the time, we'd never really had anything in San Antonio like that happen. The two abductions forever changed how missing persons cases are handled in San Antonio. While Heidi's disappearance would result in the creation of the Heidi Search Center, Erica's story would fade to the background. People said throughout the years that it was a North Side, South Side thing. It wasn't that at all. My intent has always been to remember both of the girls and to not let anybody think that Erica was forgotten or that Heidi was. I don't want them to ever be forgotten because to me, they are just as important as they were 25 years ago." Every single article that we found on Erica's case was coupled, understandably, with Heidi's. However, it is worth at least considering whether Erica Boteo's kidnapping and murder would have gotten any attention at all if she hadn't vanished while Heidi Seaman was still missing. Either way, her killer has never been caught or held to justice, and the murder of Erica Boteo remains a cold case. After 21 days of intensive searching, family, friends, and volunteers were heartbroken when the body of 11-year-old Heidi Lynn Seaman was discovered on Saturday, August 25th, 1990, exactly 29 years ago to the date of this episode's release, and less than 24 hours after the body of Erica Boteo was discovered. Heidi's body was discovered by an Austin plumber named Jack Campbell while he was riding an all-terrain vehicle through a pasture on his 450-acre ranch with his 3.5-year-old son. Her body was found off a rural road nestled in a cluster of cedar trees 6 miles north of Wimberley, about an hour north of San Antonio. My little boy and I were riding down through the pasture, and I smelled something dead. As soon as I stopped, I saw something. It was a skull. Then I saw the garbage bag. I knew it was a human body inside. I keep asking myself, did I see the sack out in my pasture before and think it was just trash somebody dumped? If I had discovered it sooner, they might have had more to go on, and that child's poor parents would not have had to suffer this long, Campbell told local media at the time. Because of the advanced stage of decomposition, it wasn't immediately clear that the body was Heidi, though it appeared to be a small child. The head was decapitated from the body, but it was determined that this occurred post-mortem from animal activity around the corpse and not as a result of the killer. The county where Heidi was located, Hays County, had no missing children, and because Heidi's abduction was well known in the area, the San Antonio police were immediately called in. San Antonio police, along with FBI agents from both Austin and San Antonio, and Department of Public Safety officers, met Hays County police at the scene to examine the body, which was wrapped in blankets and placed inside a trash bag. The remains were taken for an autopsy and were identified as Heidi's remains through dental records. At the time, and as in the case of Erica Boteo, San Antonio police declined to say whether Heidi had been sexually molested, but they did note that she had been bound with restraints, and it has been reported in more recent articles that Heidi was sexually assaulted. Even though Heidi's body was found 21 days after she went missing, police believed that both Erica and Heidi were killed shortly after being abducted and that their bodies were then dumped. They also stated that the murders were not believed to be related, that Erica and Heidi were likely killed by different people. The day after Heidi's body was found, Sunday, August 26th, Chief Medical Examiner Dr. Vincent DiMelo ruled the death a homicide, but because the body was so badly decomposed, said that it would be difficult, if not impossible, to determine the cause of death. Later news articles, though, reported that Heidi was strangled. Heidi's parents, Curtis and Teresa Seaman, went into seclusion as they dealt with the news of Heidi's murder. FBI Special Agent Claude Martin told the press, "We have a lot of leads. They're still being uncovered at this moment." Police stated that there were no suspects in the case, and despite the FBI special agent's comment on having a lot of leads, Lieutenant Albert Ortiz of the San Antonio Police Department stated, "We may never know what happened to Heidi Seaman." With the discovery of her body, the reward money, now provided for tips leading to Heidi's killer, grew to $50,000. But even with the increase, it led nowhere. With no suspects named, the case slowly faded from its intense media publicity until just over a year later, when on Saturday, March 14, 1992, the community was shocked when military investigators with the Air Force Office of Special Investigations took Major Robert Eric Duncan, age 37, into custody in relation to Heidi's abduction and murder. Major Duncan, as described before, was the lead searcher and coordinator in the efforts to locate Heidi. Not only did he coordinate volunteer activities, he also led media relations. Major Duncan also helped found the Heidi Search Center, where he served for 6 months as the president. In nearly every photo and video of the search efforts command post from when Heidi went missing, Major Duncan is there. In one photo, everyone is gathered around him, listening intently as he directs the efforts while holding a map. It isn't difficult to imagine how shocked these volunteers were to learn of his arrest. Marvin Cotton, the president of the Heidi Search Center at the time, stated, quote, "Well, it stunned most of the people here. It's something that you don't expect." Cotton said those who knew both Duncan and the Seaman family were struggling to take in the news. "We don't know what has happened. What we want is justice. If he's the one, let justice get him. No one wants somebody convicted who didn't do this. This is a horrible crime, and we want the real person." Despite law enforcement publicly stating before that they had no suspects in the case, it appeared that Major Duncan was actually the prime suspect from very early on. "I've known from almost day one that Major Duncan was a suspect. We felt like this was the man, but we didn't have the evidence at the time," said Hayes County Sheriff Paul Hastings. Major Duncan was a former supervisor of Heidi's father, Curtis Seaman, at the Brooks Air Force Base in San Antonio, and the main theory that would emerge as a potential motive would be revenge over a work dispute. Major Duncan reportedly blamed Curtis for getting Duncan transferred and removed from his supervisory job at Randolph Air Force Base. A co-worker of Duncan's told investigators that Duncan had once threatened to get even with Heidi's father. The Air Force Office of Special Investigations, OSI, had jurisdiction over the case because Curtis Seaman was in the military and Heidi was his military dependent. "It is unusual for them to get involved," Hayes County Sheriff Paul Hastings said, "but they have a legal right to do so. I don't really care who tries it, as long as the case is put to rest." While he was held in custody, the OSI searched Major Duncan's home and vehicles, and Major Duncan was given psychological tests. But just 3 days later, on Monday, March 16, 1992, he was released from custody. Howard Antelis, public spokesperson for Brooks Air Force Base, said, "I really don't know why, he just hasn't been charged. It's still an open investigation." Military rules allow a suspect to be held up to 72 hours without being charged, and since he was not charged for any crime, Duncan was due to return back to his normal duties. Law enforcement stated that despite his release, it didn't mean that Duncan was cleared as a suspect. Though Major Robert Eric Duncan was never charged by the OSI, Heidi's parents refused to give up on justice. About 4 years after Major Duncan was released from OSI custody, on May 29, 1996, Curtis Seaman filed a military complaint accusing Duncan of his daughter's murder. The premeditated murder charge was filed under military justice rules that allow one soldier to file charges against another. Major Duncan was set to retire a few days later, on June 1st, but the charges meant he would remain on active duty until the case was resolved. Duncan's attorney spoke to the press about the Duncan family, stating, quote, "They are obviously distraught. They've been planning a retirement for some time now. The good news, and he's happy about this, we're going to have our chance to defend this case." Just a few months later, on September 23, 1996, the charges against Major Duncan were dropped after a hearing examiner ruled that there was not sufficient evidence to proceed with the charges. Brigadier General Robert Bellahar, commander of Brooks Air Force Base, made the ruling, but said that Heidi's case remained open and Duncan remained the primary suspect. Throughout it all, Duncan has maintained his innocence. Some in law enforcement, too, aren't as certain as others that Major Duncan was Heidi's killer. Another suspect emerged in 1996, Jerry Naber, who at the time was in the Dominguez State Jail on unrelated drug charges. Naber was described by investigators as a heavy user and dealer of methamphetamines. In February 1996, San Antonio police questioned Naber and filed an affidavit related to a search warrant. The affidavit detailed an extremely disturbing event as described by a witness. It states that about the time of Heidi's abduction, the witness saw a young girl with her legs tied to a chair just inside the rear door of Naber's apartment. Her mouth was reportedly covered by something like a bandana, and she appeared to be crying. The witness asked Naber who the girl was, and the witness says he replied, "She's just a little meth whore I found somewhere." Police submitted DNA tests on Naber's hair and blood samples, but the tests did not link him to Heidi's murder. The unsolved abduction and murder of Heidi Seaman continues to haunt former and current investigators, but they don't all agree on who might have done it. In 2010, on the 20th anniversary of Heidi's slaying, the Austin American-Statesman spoke to former Hays County Sheriff Paul Hastings, who said about Heidi, "She was kidnapped by Major Duncan." According to the article, he also pointed to the theory that Duncan was getting revenge against Heidi's father, and he told the reporter that Duncan made a series of phone calls to his wife, Patty Hastings, who at the time was a reporter at Dripping Springs newspaper. Patty Hastings signed a statement describing how Duncan called to ask specific details about the investigations and to discuss strange dreams he was having. Patty Hastings wrote that it made her uncomfortable and described Duncan as a fruitcake. Jimmy Holguin, a former lead investigator on Heidi's case with the San Antonio Police Department, who at the time of the Statesman article was working as the chief investigator for the medical examiner's office, had a different opinion about who killed Heidi. "The case is absolutely solvable, but knowing who committed a murder and proving it are two different things. In my mind, it has been and always will be Jerry Naber," Holguin said. San Antonio Police and Texas Rangers, with help from the FBI, continue to work the case, occasionally reporting that they have new leads, but as of yet, no arrest has been made, and Heidi Seaman's murder remains unsolved. Over the years, on each anniversary of Heidi's murder, her parents, Teresa and Curtis Seaman, along with friends and family, have gathered at the site where the young girl's body was discovered in Wimberley, holding a small ceremony, leaving flowers. But in 2015, the ceremony stopped. They told NBC News 4, San Antonio, that they instead decided to remember Heidi privately at their home in Florida. It's going to seem a little strange to you, but we're actually going to stay home and we're going to have macaroni and cheese with hot dogs. That was Heidi's favorite meal, Kurt Seaman said. We'll be thinking about good memories and we're going to be smiling and celebrating her life while we have that macaroni and cheese and hot dogs, Teresa Seaman added. The Seamans choose to memorialize their daughter in this way because the hope that Heidi's killer will ever see justice is gone. My head says no, after all this time, it's not going to be solved, Teresa Seaman said. I just hate to think that there's someone out there, a child murderer, that's still out there, and he might do it again, remarked Kurt Seaman. Through no fault of the tireless and diligent efforts of the many active professionals and volunteers, Erica Boteo's murder remains in the shadow of Heidi Seaman's. Her killer, too, continues to elude justice. Erica's death was more than her mother could handle. Maria Diana Boteo was already the victim of an emotionally abusive marriage. Erica's stepfather wouldn't allow her mother to leave the home for any reason. When Erica was killed, though, Maria was able to escape the grip of her abuser, along with her three other children, with the help of a city councilman who befriended her during community search efforts for Erica. Though she faced many hardships as a single mother, she eventually overcame them. The city councilman told the San Antonio News Express that he was both elated and amazed at Maria's strength and ability to better the lives of her children and herself. Wherever Maria went, the Express News also reported, she was surrounded by neighbors and friends who kept reporters away. She wanted no attention from the death of her daughter. Like her mother, Erica Boteo's friend, who was the last person to see her alive and heard her screams as she was being taken, also remains haunted by the death of her best friend. If you have any information about the murders of Erica Boteo or Heidi Seaman, please call the San Antonio Police Department Cold Case Tip Line at 210-207-7401 or San Antonio Crime Stoppers at 210-224-STOP. That's 210-224-7867. The Austin American Statesman, the San Antonio Express News, the Odessa American, the Seguin Gazette Enterprise, Shreveport, Louisiana's The Times, the Marshall News Messenger, NBC News 4 San Antonio, and KSAT 12 News were used as sources for this episode. If you'd like to support Gone Cold Podcast, Texas True Crime, you can do so by visiting patreon.com/gonecoldpodcast. There are several varying donation levels to choose from, with perks to go along with each, including ad-free listening at all levels. Donations help us cover the costs of research and production, and we can't thank y'all enough for your support. Thanks for listening, y'all.